such a nerd.
Welcome to We Are Libertarians. This week, your host is Chris Spangle. Joining me, as always, is Chris Galt and Creighton Harrington. Mm. And that was the Game of Thrones theme. I still haven't caught up with it yet.
Terrible,
I know. And also joining us this week for a little bit is Mike Cole. Mike, you can take the mic from Creighton. He probably won't talk too much.
Creighton doesn't talk.
Yeah.
Doesn't need to, at least.
Creighton really just doesn't
all
talk
on the show.
All he does
is contradict himself, so we're saving him anyway.
basically Mike on this show, what we do every week is we come in here and then we bust each other's balls for an hour like you're supposed to. So yeah.
That's the only reason to have co-hosts.
Right. So the first thing we're going to talk about, the reason we have Mike here on the podcast, is Mike is a former radio disc jockey. Mike, where have you worked at in the past?
WCSB. Mostly it was in Cleveland. It was WCSB and WHK. WHK was actually a sports station. I did sports too.
And the FCC ruled today, this morning actually, wasn't it? And they said that broadcasters are no longer going to be fined if there's a fleeting expletive or if there's fleeting nudity on accident. So you can't really, you know, show bad things on TV or make a
bad things.
Or God, make it gotten to you, Chris.
Gee willikers. No. Gee willikers. Oh no, bad things.
What a giveaway.
And this all stems from when Bono was on, what was the, do you remember what it was? It was some award show. I think it was the Grammys.
There's always something. I mean, you know, Janet Jackson and the famous wardrobe malfunction.
Right.
It's always something.
Yeah, and Bono was accepting award, and he basically said, "This is effing awesome," on TV, and everybody freaked out because it was right after the Janet Jackson affair.
Sure.
And the climate in radio after the Janet Jackson affair became a nightmare. I mean, it changed the entire radio industry.
Every time one of these things happens, it does that. Everybody's butthole puckers when that happens.
Right.
I mean, it's just, oh, they're going to be on the lookout. We really got to be safe.
Right. I worked at WXNT before I took the job with the Libertarian Party of Indiana, and I worked there for 4 or 5 years. And you really, Bob and Tom used to have all kinds of dirty bits. They had a song called Camel Toe, and it was a double entendre song about a camel in the Middle East.
Howard Stern had tons of that stuff, too.
Right.
I mean, they made a living on it.
And they couldn't play any of that anymore because after the Janet Jackson affair, the entire industry, like you said, their butthole puckered.
Yeah.
And you could no longer, you didn't know what you could say.
Well, for the smaller stations, their whole existence would be at risk because the fine would wipe them out. For a bigger station, it would be such a hit to the bottom line that people would get fired. So either way, the chilling effect was the same.
There's a DJ named Bubba the Love Sponge in Tampa, and he is the recipient of the
Bubba, that's his
legal name, Bubba the Love Sponge Clem. He's from Warsaw, Indiana. I'm sorry.
Not again, Spangle.
This just accidentally started playing. I don't know what's going
on.
we were talking earlier.
It's those iPhones. It's the iPhone.
They suck. I'll vouch for that.
I would not normally say this, but my phone the last week has been doing weird stuff like this.
I think it's time to upgrade.
I might have to go to an Android.
Uh-oh.
I killed the app and it's still playing. So I'm sorry about that. We'll hit the dump button on that later. But
amateurs.
After this, if you're getting what you're paying for, listeners, this is a free podcast.
Well, that's a good point.
Right.
Good point.
So basically what happened is after the Janet Jackson affair, everything went dark. I mean, people started freaking out. I remember one time Smiley on WZPL said scumbag on the air, and the lawyers at Intercom freaked out. And we're all sitting there looking at each other and going, what's the problem? Well, do you know what a scumbag is? And I was like, well, Bill Clinton? And they go, no, it's a used condom. I'm like, what?
You know, I love Urban Dictionary and I love all the vernacular. I'd never heard that one before.
No, never, ever, ever.
That some stuff suit lawyer knew that blows my mind.
Right.
Blows my mind.
And so Smiley then proceeded to go on the air after he had a conversation with that lawyer and used scumbag about 14 times.
Wow. I would have done the same thing.
All hail.
Yeah.
Come on.
And it just, you didn't know what you could say or could not say. There was no, our lawyers at Intercom asked the FCC, lawyers for Clear Channel, Cumulus, CBS, asked for a list of what you can and cannot say on radio, and they could not provide it. It was
the best you could do is George Carlin's seven words.
Right.
And this was always mystifying to me. Why was on the list? It doesn't rank with or I mean, those are the, those are about as heavy as you can get.
I'm going to have to do some editing.
Well, see, look, it's see how it's gotten to him.
Well, yeah, exactly.
But we're having a discussion on the words that can or cannot be used, and that even that itself got to be a matter of consideration, because let's consider Joe Biden.
Right.
Joe Biden leans over to President Obama and says, "That's a big effing deal."
Right.
Okay. But he says
he says big effing deal. Yeah.
Thank you. So he's
I'm gonna
now he's corrected me. I thought Creighton was the guy who contradicted himself. Come on, Chris. But that's news. This happens. Where that was the chambers of the Senate.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's news. You're right.
You need to talk into the mic.
Well, they used to get in fist fights in the floor of the Senate.
Right.
I mean, they'd beat each other up with their canes. And now one guy drops an F-bomb, barely audible, and, you know, the whole world's got to stop. And, you know, the morals of America are degenerating, and the Obama administration is a gang of, you know, rabid dogs because one guy dropped an F-bomb.
Right. And it really... You're talking about language and conversation. Someone made some comment about Howard Stern. It's like, no, he's on satellite, so he can curse all the time. You know, he doesn't go on his show and every minute say, "Fuck, ass."
Keep going, Chris. You're rolling.
Thanks.
I think the first week he was on, he did.
Yeah,
because it was like, oh, the leash is off.
Right.
But and I chimed in on that conversation. I thought Stern was at his best when he was dancing on the line.
Mm-hmm.
When he was saying, "Oh, we think this is where the line is, so I'm going to give it a little shove here."
Right. The difference at Sirius Satellite Radio without any censorship is that his show is basically him talking with a group of people about the day's events or interviewing movie stars, actresses, you know, and asking them questions that everybody wants to know. And having conversations that we have in our regular life and not worrying about, oh, well, am I allowed to say this? Am I allowed to say scumbag on the air? I mean, it got so silly. And the FCC really became one of the biggest limiters of free speech in the United States.
Besides Chris Spangle.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
Shut up, you.
Hey, what was it? The second episode, I said the R word and you flipped out on me and paused the show. And
which
like,
R word?
Retard.
Oh, rutabaga?
Yeah, rutabaga.
That's the new Thank one you, that you're not
that was
allowed
good.
To say.
Not
you're not allowed to say it.
I'll tell you what, Chris. I won't say rutabaga, okay?
Okay.
If anyone says Jehovah.
Listen, there are just some things that...
Good, he got it.
You never know... Yeah, I get it. Okay. You never know if someone's
He's
listening
the
and they're offended by that or if they're hurt by that. And you just... It's better just to be sensitive towards people's, you know...
More likes, man. We can't be doing
this. We have to go likes, full yeah. frontal. So
you know, when I was on at WCSB, it was a community station, and we were known for pushing the envelope. We did. I mean, one of the staples of my show was to play music by Lisa Suckdog from her very great album "Drugs Are Nice."
this was the '80s, or
this was the late '80s. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So I mean, Gigi Allen, you know, these kind of things.
Oh my god!
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mike was really energetic on the
air. I have no idea what you're talking about, Chris. So what happened? You know, there was something called Safe Harbor,
right?
And that time changed at some points in our broadcast history. It was from midnight until 6. From other periods, it was from 10 o'clock. Then it was 8 o'clock. And it depended. And this is the root of the thing, I guess, that bugs me. It depended who was in the office.
Mm-hmm.
It was purely arbitrary.
Right.
It was not codified. It was not a matter of Congress wrote a law. It was simply an agency that was interpreting on the fly.
Right.
And it's always been.
It was setting policy.
Yeah.
It wasn't like there was...
Isn't that not even in? Well, I'll be like Snerdly today then.
Isn't that not even the FCC's charter? Is their job solely to just make sure frequencies don't interact with each other?
Yeah, the FCC was set up and designed at the at the beginning of radio to make sure that radio waves weren't interfering with each other, that you couldn't have one station pirate and broadcast on another channel signal, and so you wouldn't have. WZPL says, haha, we're going to take 96.3 down and broadcast ZPL by changing our tuning.
Sure. Hit a harmonic and watch everybody on adjacent stations go away.
Right, exactly. And so that's what it was designed for. And over time, especially starting in the 80s with the Reagan administration, it started to creep into this area of, well, we need to have community standards. And what really threw the fire on it was Tipper Gore. Is when she came out and started, we need the label on the albums, like Green Day's album, Dookie. We need to put a sticker on that so kids don't buy it.
Well, it was before that. It was Two Live Crew. It was 83. It was Two Live Crew and the hip-hop rap scene. Yeah, it was, there was certain... They had descriptions. There was indecent versus obscene. Mm-hmm. Indecent you could do during the Safe Harbor. Obscene? Oh, never.
Right.
Never. You're gone if you do that.
That's why Loveline is always on after 10 p.m. on a radio station. So Dr. Drew and Adam Carolla used to be on WZPL after 10 o'clock in Indianapolis. And that was an acceptable hour because they think, it's free radio. A kid can turn – every kid has a radio. You turn it on. And most of them are in bed after 10 o'clock, so they're not going to hear discussions about drugs and sex and lifestyle questions, which you can have a doctor on and discuss all that, which is how they get away with it.
Sure.
But it's – Loveline's way filthier than Howard Stern ever was in the morning.
You uttered the one word that speaks to me of what happened over time, and that's creep. It's bureaucratic creep, that you install a bureaucracy and it looks for things to do.
Right.
And it begins to more broadly and ever increasingly broadly define its own existence and justify its existence. Mm-hmm. Because after all, it's got to chase funding and it's got to say to the country, this is why we're here. This is what we're doing. We're doing important things,
Right.
And it starts with the phrase, the public interest, broadcasting in the public interest. That's the underpinning of the FCC. Well, what's the public interest? Now, you can define it as saying, okay, making sure that the stations don't overlap one another, the big station A doesn't blow away small station B, that treaties are recognized between nations. For instance, Canada can blow our stations away anytime it wants.
Right.
That's just a matter of treaty. And we blow away Cuba every time we want.
Right.
Those things, okay, fine. But to interpret those things, that's what emerges over time, and that's where the bureaucratic creep comes. And they hop on incidents. Two Live Crew, boom! That's just the excuse we're looking for. It reminds me of, let's not waste a good emergency, or however they put it.
Yeah, Janet Jackson, literally, I think it was like 16 complaints to the FCC, and that's what...
In a nation of 300 million.
Right. Yeah. And, it's in my public interest to have Howard Stern on the airwaves, and he was the biggest... He was the ratings king everywhere he went, except Indianapolis, actually, because of Bob and Tom.
Because of Bob and Tom.
He became number one, and he took these small, struggling stations, he grew them into monsters, and then the FCC drove him off of regular radio onto satellite radio, and billions of dollars of revenue was lost, and it collapsed the entire radio industry. And people like me, I wanted to work in radio for the rest of my life, but there is absolutely zero chance of that ever happening because there is no work, because there is no money. The station that I worked on has zero employees, and when I started there in 2004, they had 15 employees. And it's because revenue has declined because radio has become more, in my opinion, more sanitized and more.
Well, that's chicken and egg, too.
Yeah.
Some of it gets to be business plan after a while.
Sure.
Where you can look at it and say, well, we can survive on a 0.1 here because it costs us so little to program this show that comes for almost, it's so cheap.
Right.
Yeah, well, we'll fill that with 3 hours and then. We'll put those public service ads from the federal government in there, and voila, radio, yeah.
Nothing is better than the ad council.
I feel like it's changing at all. I kind of feel like as one generation goes and another becomes your main demographic of what you target. I mean, I feel like our generation doesn't really give a crap. And I know the FCC doesn't really operate upon whether or not they think the public gives a crap. They just want to do it because they're the FCC.
Can you say the word crap?
You can say – you can say crap on the radio if you are talking about
– gambling?
It's an exclamation. It's like, oh, crap. Yeah, you can get away with that.
That's like that
but
South Park
episode. If you say, hey, hold on. I'll be right back. I have to go take a crap during the break,
you can't say that. It's like that South Park episode.
Wow.
As long as you say the S word in the expletive or as long as you're not being literal about it. The whole episode.
You cannot talk about any bodily functions.
How stupid is that?
You can't talk about snot.
What?
You can't talk about snot.
Oh my God,
that's how.
You're
that's
bad.
Right. And so, Michael Powell who's Colin Powell's son, was put in charge of the FCC. Michael Powell had no experience in broadcasting, but he was Colin Powell's son, so he got put in charge of the FCC. And he has since apologized for the witch hunt that they went on with broadcasters. You know, they fined Howard Stern millions of dollars. Bubba the Love Sponge got the single largest fine at $750,000 for a bit about Michael Jackson being a pedophile. And it wasn't – you listen to it now, and it's not shocking at all. And it's not – you know, it's not crossing their lines, but it talks about Michael Jackson being a pedophile in a parody manner, and that received a $750,000 fine from the FCC. That is happening less and less and less because it has been clear through the court system that every time the FCC and the government go to defend themselves against CBS, Clear Channel, Intercom, that the courts are siding with broadcasters like they did today. And so it's now opened up a little bit. You still can't say the seven dirty words unless you're on a government-funded community or public radio station. Ironically, you can go on WFYI here in Indianapolis and say all you want. And
well,
so
isn't it also FCC only does like broadcasting, so basic cable is not part of the FCC's, you know, jurisdiction. They can go out and they
cable is not regulated by those community standards. They regulate themselves and they have their own compliance department.
That's
they
why
regulate themselves.
That's why
right.
That's
what
why Comedy Central can put on
that's why Comedy
the Secret
Central,
Stash at midnight.
At midnight and then they can show a full movie with whatever they want because the way that the broadcast stations, the four big broadcast, NBC, ABC, CBS, Fox, and I guess CW if you want to count that as a broadcast station.
What about UPN, man?
UPN. they are regulated by the FCC. Cable is a subscription service like Sirius Satellite Radio, like HBO. And so they say, you know what you're getting if you turn on cable and you see bad words or you see nudity, then standards and practices that they answer to.
How does the FCC react, though, when somebody states the obvious, like, well, we don't have to turn on that station if we don't like it? I mean, what has been historically the main point they've tried to kind of circumvent that argument?
Their argument is that it's for the children, and if one child stumbles upon it, then that's one too many. You know, that you're affecting, and it's not just the Christian right. The Christian right is the main driving force. The Parents Television Council, which, you know, forever, before Howard Stern was on America's Got Talent this season, they came out against him being on America's Got Talent because they hadn't broadcast anything yet, but they just knew he was going to be dirty.
Well,
and then the Parents Television Council is literally like a dozen people in Colorado, and that's it.
Do you think that they recognize that every time they do this kind of stuff where they start railing on some radio host or TV show or something, all they do is just make it stronger because everybody's like, oh, this is a...
No.
They don't get it?
Let Mike weigh in on that.
Not a chance. They don't get it. They don't get it. I mean,
right.
Doesn't the Westboro Baptist Church get a bunch of what assholes they are by putting out the God hates fag signs? No, they don't. They keep doing it.
Right.
Do you want to tag that there?
No, it's okay.
Okay, good. I mean, really.
That one's not illegal yet.
It isn't?
No.
Oh.
Hey, you're not, yeah. In that context, it's okay.
But the R word is.
Spangles Standards and Practices says in that context, I rule that okay. We're a free podcast by the libertarians. And
Yeah, you've had crusading, people about broadcasts and personal activities for years, they don't get it. They just believe in their righteousness, and that's beginning and the end of the whole story.
They wouldn't like this, but devil's advocate. You know, they look at it and they say, well, you know, you don't understand that this is harming you, but we understand that this is harming you. So
and we love you.
We love you, so we want to protect you. We want to shelter you from bad things. You know, so it is that typical, you know,
Different than the soda tax. I mean, they want to use government as a power to intervene on your behalf, even though you don't get it. We get it. You don't get it. You're not smart enough. Let us intervene.
Right.
I know, but it seems to me like Howard Stern probably wouldn't be one of the most well-known radio hosts in the world if the FCC wasn't always on his butt trying to say that you're too crazy, you're doing too much. So people are like, oh, this guy's pushing the line. I'll listen to his radio show.
It was the mid to late 80s when he had a New Year's Eve special where a guy played a miniature piano with his penis. And that was the first fine. Listen, it was the mid 80s, all right?
I was born in saner times.
But that goes to the Parents Television Council argument. Like, we look at that and we're like, yeah, I saw that on Reddit like yesterday. Like,
yeah, I know.
That's how far we've come. It's
you
like,
know, you can actually find websites where they're trying to push for legislation to censor the internet for that. Not censor the internet for like ACTA or SOPA reasons, but censor it because.
But again,
you can go to
your local Family Christian bookstore and you can buy software that censors your TV, software that censors your computer. And you can put matters into your own hands. You can rent DVDs that have sanitized movies, which is
cable boxes have the parental controls.
I actually read an article where there's this organization that takes movies like Saving Private Ryan, and they'll cut out all the gore or all the cuss words and re-release it at theaters so that it's basically everything that made it good is gone.
Yeah, and you that is see,
do I look like a bitch?
Yeah,
Pulp Fiction. Yeah, Pulp Fiction is just credits and then credits.
Maybe a dance.
Yeah, there's a dance scene and there's credits.
Reservoir Dogs is literally just the Joker's in the middle with you, and then the rolls credits. But you know, it's let's not just beat up on the Christian right. It's also
why don't we want to do that?
Well, listen, that's half of our content on this podcast. I know, but. You know, it's the nannies, it's the busybodies of any political variety. It's also the people who, the PC police, the people who want political correctness in every aspect. That's harming community standards. And it's the slippery slope argument, too, is that once we start regulating free speech in the interest of community standards, then you start having to regulate everything. Somebody is always going to be offended by everything you say, no matter what.
So community standards means the FCC's... whatever they say.
Personal opinion.
Okay, so by community they mean 300 million people.
It really is. The community standards are governed by the half a dozen to a dozen people who sit on the FCC. The FCC, are they governors? Is that what they're called, Mike?
Yes.
And they basically rule on these cases. They take these complaints and then they process the complaints. They sit and talk about the complaint and then they rule one way or the other and then they send out a fine to the broadcast company or the individual broadcaster. You know, and it's completely limiting of free speech. They limit our free speech, and they're getting better because they have learned from their mistakes of the last 10 years, and mostly because broadcasters and the National Association of Broadcasters are donating to congressmen across the board to make this lighten up a little bit. And you're getting more favorable rulings when you get one of these complaints. You know, when you get 13 complaints for Janet Jackson's supposed nipple, then they say, well, listen, it was a fleeting incident. It's, you know, it wasn't intentional. I'm sorry. You know, and were you really damaged by seeing Janet Jackson's nipple? I mean, it was horrifying. I was horrified, but, you know, it was not that bad. You weren't damaged, you know, mentally or psychologically.
Somebody else might have been.
Somebody's always going to. I mean, sitting here and saying that.
I mean, somebody could have been damaged by.
You know what, Galt? You are a nice person, and I really like you. Someone just took offense to that. I know it.
Well, let's hope we get a bunch of boycotters on our podcast.
I know. If you hate us,
then we can get big and get some media.
The entire premise of the argument rests upon the foundation that everyone has the same exact moral code. And if everyone has the same moral code, then you can actually kind of. you can regulate it in it. But the thing is not everybody has the same moral code. So something that is tame to the FCC is going to be over the line for, you know, Westboro Baptist Church members or something.
Right.
And you even get to the point where things that are offensive are things that are political, are politically, you know, hot button issues.
Right.
So some people may find the very mention of, you know, the word homosexual as offensive, but you can't censor that word because you're in a, then you're, you know, that's just a political hot issue.
Right.
And then you get the entire homosexual segment of America beating on you for being homophobic. Same thing goes, there could be some dudes in backwoods South that think that you say the word African American, it's offensive.
Right.
And you can't I mean,
the Westboro Baptist Church will picket Billy Graham's funeral when he passes. I mean, it's like, it's, you know, you look, everybody, the society, the community considers Billy Graham a good individual, but they don't. You know, so it just, that's the folly of big government, is that you're trying to fit it, you know, towards the whole. Somebody's always going to get hurt.
I think to follow on what he's saying, you can break it down. You can reduce that. Okay, say take it away from the federal, say at the state level. You're still going to have those differences. Take it down to the municipal level. You're still going to have those differences. Hell, go on my block where I live. You're going to have those differences.
You're in my house.
There's six people in my house, and we argue over this crap all the time.
Yeah,
right.
So, at the end of the day, how it breaks down for me is either there's free speech or there isn't.
Right. As you know, moving from, you know, I thought, all right, I've left radio, I'm going into politics, libertarian politics, you know, no longer will my speech be limited. And then I started dealing with candidates in the FEC and the Federal Election Commission and the regulations on campaign finance and how you can place your signs. You have to have a little white box around the paid for by so-and-so candidate on your yard signs. You know, these little tiny dingbat rules that don't really mean anything are limiting to free speech, especially smaller party candidates, you know, that just can't compete with the big guys with the amount of compliance that they have to do. So, you know, the FEC has now, in my eyes, become the greatest free speech limiter in the United States now that the FCC has started to back off.
It started to. I'd be interested to see when somebody really pushes the envelope. See what happens with the next decision. Someone really lays a good one. You know, like a Gilbert Gottfried doing the Aristocrats. Someone broadcasts that in the middle of the night, thinks that's ha, ha, ha funny.
Right.
Let's see what happens then when the complaint rolls in for that. Because right. I assure you somebody's doing that somewhere.
Right.
On some 10 water or 100 water out there where they do push the envelope.
All right. Well, Mike, thanks for joining us and talking about the ruling this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Galt and I are going to hold the fort for a little bit while Spangle signs some paperwork with our previous
host. He left his phone in here, so it'll probably go off a few times.
Yeah. but I guess we can talk about Paul Fest, which we've already talked about once, but Galt can't work the recording program either.
he usually does it, so. Yeah. Anyway.
Anyway, so Paul Fest is coming up. It's going to be right before the Republican National Convention in Tampa. It's going to be an outdoor thing. Yep.
Florida State Fairgrounds.
It's going to, apparently, I mean, it's been
3 days long.
As all things with Ron Paul and the Republican Party go, it's been pretty, you know, controversial because the RNC has been blocking, and now they say they're going to be okay with it, and all the planning's going forward for the thing, and I wouldn't be surprised if they come down, oh, we need the fairgrounds. But
yeah.
It looks like if everything goes well and they actually get to do it, it looks like it'll be pretty good.
Yep, the Paul Fest, it's paulfest.org, I think, and it says on there that it's going to be the largest Freedom Festival in history. So I hope it turns out that great. I don't know how many people they're expecting or have bought tickets or whatever, but I'm not sure if I'll be going just because of costs. And it's expensive to go to Tampa for a college kid.
Yeah, well.
Is it still?
I think you're recording.
Okay.
I'm fairly certain you're recording.
All right. Yep.
Okay. So, I lost my train of thought. I totally lost my train of thought.
Anyway, yeah, so check out Paul Fest if you're interested in going to something like that. I know I missed the Rally for the Republic, and I regret it every day because, I mean, it was one of his greatest accomplishments, in my opinion. And I'm sure this will turn out great, probably way bigger, being outdoors, being at a fairgrounds. So I'm excited to see the turnout, and they still have three more sets of speakers and bands and stuff to announce, so I'm excited to see who else is going to go. I heard their headliner band right now is the Misfits.
The Misfits?
Yeah. So they said they have released a fourth, one fourth of what they're going to announce. They're going to do it in four pieces. So,
well, I mean, it'll be good. Anytime they have this kind of stuff, they do well, and Ron Paul people are, you know, insane, so they'll hitchhike across the country to get to the thing if they have to.
Yeah.
But it'll be cool. It'll be nice to have it right next to the RNC, because usually whenever there's some sort of quasi similar protest, whatever you want to do, something that is kind of piggybacking off of the Republican National Convention, there's always something new story that comes out of it. I remember Rage Against the Machine had a protest outside of the Republican National Convention a few, you know, probably 10 years ago, whenever it was. And of course, there was a riot because Rage Against the Machine can do nothing in public without causing a riot. But yeah, so last time Ron Paul, he had the Rally for the Republic, and it kind of got a lot more press than the Republican National Convention did.
It was right next door, and it was free, and theirs cost money.
Yeah, and this will get a lot of press. It'll probably be pretty good, and I don't know. We'll see. The Republican National Convention, I think, will be fun to watch this year anyway, just because of all the stuff that we figure will go down. It won't be tame. Ron wants it to be tame. The Republican National Committee wants it to be tame. It's not going to be tame.
No.
It's not going to be tame.
I know that some listeners listen to our podcast so they can keep up on some news and current stuff. So I think we should throw in just little things that have been happening. If you haven't been keeping up on the news, Mitch Daniels will now be the president of Purdue University.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
He's supposed to announce today. Or he might have, I don't know when, so it might have actually happened by the time this comes out, but I don't know how the deal worked or whatever, but I do know that that's happened, something with his private company and the current president declaring Purdue as a failing school, let Governor Daniels take over. So,
He's going to be governor president, or he's going to be president when he's done being governor?
When he's done being governor,
okay,
he'll become president of Purdue. I think that's the announcement today. So I don't know how that's going to change anything with Purdue, or I'm sure he'll do a great job, but that's not where I saw Mitch Daniels going, to be honest.
Me either.
So, other than that, Fast and Furious.
Yeah, I guess we can go ahead and talk about that. Big news. Everyone's talking about it. Fast and Furious is getting pretty hot. Representative Issa is, you know, pushing Holder pretty hard, and Holder's basically stonewalling the crap out of him, and now Holder's up for contempt charges that will be voted in the House. And I mean, it's not unheard of. I mean, a lot of people have had contempt charges brought on them by congressmen. Carl Rove had some, so it's not like it means the end for Holder, but it probably means the end for Holder.
Do you think Holder, Obama will step in and do something?
He already has. He said executive privilege, and that's why he doesn't have to give some information to the committee.
Right. But, I mean, couldn't he pardon him?
No, he could. He could pardon him. But what I see happening is that Holder's just going to be, if this gets any bigger, like it's become a big story now. It's kind of been one of those, it's happening, but it's not the story for a long time. I think if it becomes the story, then I really think Obama's going to do.
Holder's done.
Yeah, he's going to distance himself from Holder, and Holder's going to be done.
During the election, he doesn't want that.
Yeah, and the bad thing is, I think Holder's going to be a scapegoat. I think Holder signed. I have no reason to doubt that this was not known upon by the Obama administration from top to bottom when it started. I mean, Holder knew about it. Obama knew about it. They're not going to say they knew about it, but I mean, come on. Right. Of course they knew about it. This is such a it was a political program as much as it was a, you know, stop Mexican drug cartels program. I mean, I heard that they had an email saying that one of the outcomes of this they hoped to have was that gun control legislation would get a little bit more support, because the Mexicans were coming over from the cartels and killing Americans with U.S. guns, you know. That was I don't know if
that's
that
not
was
surprising
the,
to me at all.
Yeah, I don't think it was the ultimate intention, but from what I understand, they have emails that show from insiders saying that that was something they hoped that came out of it. And it's just like, of course this was political from the beginning. And if Obama really, really wanted to stop Mexican drug cartels, I mean, and the Justice Department wanted to get on them or the FBI or anything, I mean, there are so many ways they could have done it that are not so, I mean, stupid. And they didn't do it because, and I don't think it's because Obama's stupid. I think it's because there was political purposes. But if this gets up to the president, if it turns out that he, you know, there's proof that his hand was in this, I mean, you're talking about some big, big stuff because, I mean, this is a big deal. I mean, American, the U.S. government selling guns, arming.
Can he say executive privilege? I mean,
yeah, he already has.
Nixon did, and he still had to give up the tapes.
Yeah, well,
Obama.
No, yeah, the Obama can say executive privileges, but I mean, anything the president does, if Congress really wanted to, anything the president does, Congress could overrule them.
Right.
They overturn vetoes. The president, if Congress would assert their authority, the president really doesn't have much. Congress just lets the president do what he wants, and he gets away with it because Congress doesn't do anything. But if Congress had a full of statesmen with cojones, they could tell him you know, you're going to do what we tell you, and he could veto. But they can. I mean, Congress has the most power out of all three branches. They really do. They have the most checks on other branches. They do, and they were supposed to because they're the ones that represent that are more directly affiliated with
and
the people.
The biggest.
And they're the biggest, and they represent more.
Yeah, they're yeah.
But yeah, if
they're
if,
elected
if
more often,
Obama doesn't get this. He thinks that he can do what he wants. I actually went on a rant the other day about on my blog about how Obama is, you know, very arrogant with the fact that he thinks he can do whatever he thinks he wants to do, and he doesn't have to ask Congress for permission. I mean. The whole program with passing executive orders to implement policy because Americans can't wait for the politics of Congress. The politics of Congress can't get in the way. You know, we need to push these things forward now. Americans demand it. And he's going to pass all these policies that Congress didn't pass because Congress is doing what they're supposed to and debating issues. You know, I mean, it's just arrogant. It really is arrogant. You know, drone campaigns. Oh, I can kill American citizens because I'm the president and I say so. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. And it really, one of the biggest things that gets under my skin is that the American left, the one that made footage of President Bush getting assassinated for the death of a president. I mean, hated Bush for his overreach on almost every single turn. And they're just letting it go with Obama. They're just letting it go. The only people that complain on the left are like the diehard Marxist socialists that are in the Communist Party. I mean, the mainstream left that, you know, for all was actually had, you know, a good argument when Bush was doing all these things during the Iraq War that were just so far gone beyond constitutional. And Obama does the same stuff, and he does it even more. He does it. He amplifies it. And they're silent. They're silent.
Exactly. That's what Glenn Greenwald was talking about at the Civil Liberties Tour. He was just talking about how basically the left is all against Bush when he's there, but Obama can continue and do the exact same thing. And they're fine with it.
Yeah.
And I don't understand that. I guess it's as libertarians, we're principled, so it doesn't matter which side is doing it. We're against it.
Yeah.
But I don't understand how they are like that.
I don't know either. I mean,
how can you be against something when a Republican does it, but not against it if a Democrat does it? It's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, of course. As I said in my blog post, you know, there is no truth in politics. Reality is perception. There is nothing. It's politics. Whatever's true, it's whatever you want it to be. Obama could, you know, do action X. Bush could do action X. The Democrats are going to find a way to tell you why Obama's action is actually action Y. I mean, they're going to find some way of saying this is different, even if it's just because of the date.
And that
it's
was
a different day.
The same thing with the Republicans when Bush did the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
The Republicans were like, this is why X is Y. This is why we should do this.
And I mean, I really... It kind of irks me, too, on the right. I mean, the left, I mean, they're just cowards is really what it comes down to. The American left is just a bunch of cowards because they don't want...
Call them out.
No, they are. They're a bunch of cowards because they don't want to... That's their poster boy, and he's doing everything that he said... He's doing everything he said he wouldn't do when it comes to civil liberties. Everything he said he wouldn't do, and everything he said he was going to do, he failed to do, and he is not trying to do any... He can't close Guantanamo because terrorism, and, I mean, he doesn't want to try people in civilian courts because it's a war, even though we haven't declared a war. He's blowing people up with Predator drones and saying that if you're standing next to someone they've already identified as a terrorist, then you're a terrorist. And therefore, anybody who gets blown up by a Predator drone is de facto a terrorist. They're saying if you get blown up by a Predator drone, you're a terrorist because a Predator drone blew you up. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. And they're cowards because they're not calling him out on it. They're saying it's necessary. It's obvious that they just don't want to look soft on terror. They want to get the independent vote that is with the right on the war on terror, but not anything else. So they're trying to get that vote, and they're trying to not look soft on terror. And it's obvious what they're doing, and they're a bunch of cowards for not calling them out at every turn on it. But the right is also similar in that, you know, they had a chance to, if they're going to be a bunch of spineless politicians and just basically contradict the president on everything, they could have said, oh, the president signed the Patriot Act, but I mean... Well, it's the president. The Patriot Act must be bad. No, they're basically saying Obama's good when it comes to this because he's signing the Patriot Act and he's killing American citizens without a trial. He's good, but everything else he's bad. I mean, it's just like if you really I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. We have the left staying absolutely silent about things that they had been for, you know, almost 10 years saying were some of the biggest encroachments on human freedom, and they're just silent when their poster boy does it. And then you have the right saying, "Yeah, look at this. This guy's blowing up innocent civilians."
Yeah.
Heck yeah, he's not too bad. Healthcare. Yeah, healthcare's terrible. We need to get him on healthcare and economic issues, but blowing up civilians? Come on, man. Obama's not all bad. Look at that.
It's like one of those e-car memes I saw the other day that said, I never understood the world until I figured out it was ran by sociopaths.
Yeah.
It's just people.
I don't know. In this Fast and Furious, I mean, even if Obama had, Obama had nothing to do with it, which is ridiculous. Of course he had something to do with it. I mean, the fact that he can just say, oh, well, you know, my attorney general, I think that I'm going to say, because I'm the president, that you can't do anything with him because he's my attorney general. Executive privilege.
I'm the president.
Yeah. I don't know. It's just like... And I don't know why he had to have a British accent, but
I
think British people are snooty.
The Founding Fathers would have thought this was tyranny already.
Oh, my God. The Founding Fathers would have thought it was tyranny in 1830.
I mean,
right after Jefferson died, they would have been like, what are you guys dealing with? We had a 3-cent tax on tea, and we threw it off a boat. You guys get your income taken from you at almost 70% sometimes. What are you guys dealing with? No. We're already way past the intent for American government, but I don't know. So
what do you think will actually happen with this? Do you
think with Fast and Furious? I don't know. I really think it could go both ways. It could turn out to be really crazy. It could turn out to be a crazy story and on par with, you know, some of the biggest controversies of presidential history. It really could. But at the same time, it could just be brushed under the rug because they don't want to bring that up for election time. And, you know, Romney, I don't know. I don't think Romney's going to go on "you sold guns" and all. I don't know. But he could. He could use that as an election thing, but he hasn't yet. I feel like he would have brought that up in the debates because it's kind of just general anti-Obama.
Have any of the political commentators been talking about it a lot?
Well, they brought it up on
Fox News.
Yeah, they brought it up on mainstream news and they talk about it. They talk about what's happening, but as far as I don't know, I don't watch it enough to know. Yeah. Like Bill O'Reilly probably is like, hey, "This is necessary because the because the Mexican drug cartels are getting bad, and we gotta, and you know, I mean,
Glenn Beck would have been like, George Washington, cry.
Yeah, no. This is not good for Israel.
I am a libertarian. Defend Israel.
Yeah. I would die for Israel. I'll say it right now. He said that online. He said that on live. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I wrote a blog post, and I encourage everyone who listens to go to
your
it.
Your blog post?
Yeah.
What's your blog?
It's Thoughts, Insights, and Metaphysical Speculations.
Wow. What's the URL?
Metaphysicalspecs.blogspot.com. Right. It's not like I spend a lot of time on it. It's kind of just one of the things where if I want to rant and I don't want to do it in a Facebook note, I put it on there.
All right.
But, yeah, I went on a rant about how at his Cleveland fundraiser, we kind of mentioned this on the show last time, at his Cleveland fundraiser a few weeks back, he said, you know, why would you vote for Mitt Romney? Because we already know that all he wants to do is bring us back to the same failed Bush policies that didn't work and got us into this mess. And I was just like, that's you. That's exactly what you do. The same failed Bush policies. Oh, we need to reform health care. Well, Medicare Part D. I mean, we need to reform financial regulation. Sarbanes-Oxley, Dodd-Frank. I mean, you can find all this legislation right. That is so similar. Even the immigration policy. If anything, Bush would try to do something a little more hardcore than Obama. Obama's just trying to say that we're not going to deport you if you're under 30.
Obama's deported more people.
Yeah, he's deported. He's already. Yes, he's deported already. More people. And the thing is Bush wanted to do amnesty. Which is way more than Obama's under 30 thing, and I don't know. It's just they're so similar that it's ridiculous, and that people can do mental gymnastics somehow and say that because
and
once
twist it around in his favor.
I mean, it's just it gets under my skin. It's just like if it looks like a duck and it sounds like a duck, it's a duck.
I think it's because people don't want I voted for Obama. I didn't really. I'm just saying people are like, I voted for Obama. I don't want to feel like I made the wrong choice. So,
no, of course.
He's right, and I will find a way to defend him. And I don't know, they just twist everything.
And at the same time, I think it comes down to is that no one really has an understanding of, you know, political philosophies. When it comes to government, it doesn't matter whether or not you're modern government, classical, you have to have a political philosophy. And if your political philosophy is, you know, stand back and just kind of vote every, I mean, that's not really a political philosophy.
Right.
So you're not going to have a coherent set of ideas. So basically your political philosophy becomes I'm a Democrat and it's good because it's Democrat. He's a Republican, he's good, he's bad because he's a Republican, or vice versa.
Right.
And anything that, you know, kind of contradicts that is just kind of rationalized into that whole idea of Democrat good, Republican bad, or Republican good, Democrat bad. And it doesn't really make sense. So when Ron Paul goes up there and to the American right and says that I'm a Republican, but I'm going to do things that, you know, Republicans traditionally don't like, or not traditionally, under Bush Republicans don't like, they rationalize him to just being a Democrat in disguise. And the Democrats do the same thing when there's somebody who's a blue dog Democrat. Oh, he's just a Republican in disguise.
Right.
And it's just, if you don't have a coherent set of ideas, which is why libertarianism, I think, is so long-term sustainable, because I mean really if you look the way I look at it is yeah, they look at it as Democrat and Republican as opposing parties. I look at it as statism versus like liberty.
Yeah.
So right. They all have their own statist, you know, rationalization for how to increase the state, and they're in the same camp. It's kind of stupid to just separate them, whereas libertarians, and not just libertarians, I mean, I don't want to say little L libertarians to you voluntarists.
Right. And the constitutionalists.
And the constitutionalists, yes.
Yeah.
We have a coherent set of ideas.
Right.
You know, freedom, don't infringe on my rights of life, liberty, and property, and we recognize government as being no different than any other individual in that restraint. And when you have that kind of straight that consistent philosophy that you can apply to essentially all situations, then I mean, yeah, you're able to call out the left and the right at the same time. But, I mean, trying to have a typical Democrat or a typical Republican.
Right. The average voter doesn't have those. Yeah, that platform at all.
And to their credit.
It's all about an R or D.
And to their credit, a lot of average voters are just... They don't care. I mean, we're weird.
Right.
Me, you, Spangle, we're weird. We actually spend more than, you know, Election Day caring about this stuff. And we spend more than, you know, getting home from work and watching The Five on Fox News than caring about it. I mean, we take trips to different cities to go to, I mean, yeah.
It's like when somebody I've never talked to before about politics, you know, they bring it up and I start talking to them and they're like, are you a Republican or a Democrat? And I'm just like,
yeah.
That's the first question they always ask.
And
when I answer, they're like, oh, you're one of those guys.
Yeah. It's like, when I was at work, a long time ago, one of the managers above me was into politics. She's a Republican, though. She was really into Republicanism. You know, and I say that meaning she was a partisan.
Okay.
And, I said that I was a little L libertarian. She did not know what the little L meant when I said that. So she thought strictly party. She's like, well, the Libertarian Party's never going to do anything. And I was like, well, I don't believe in just the Libertarian Party. I think Ron Paul, blah, 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 you know, small government can be Republican and all this kind of stuff. And she, when I said libertarian, she could not get past the idea that I wasn't just talking about
a party. Give her the Reagan quote.
Yeah, I was just talking about a political philosophy. I was talking about a consistent logical premise for a social ethic, which is really what, you know, libertarianism comes down to, is it is one of the few, if not the only, consistent philosophies of a social ethic for people to live in a society with each other. And I'm not saying that it's the only one that there's ever been. I'm saying that it's one of the only ones I've ever found that's consistent and, you know, pretty well grounded in argument. And people don't think about it like that. Average Joes, they look at it as, you know, parties exist. That's where our political philosophy comes from. It doesn't come from us. It comes from a party. And I'll just go along for the ride.
Do you think that's the same as at college?
At college, I think it's different, but only because people are ready to question. I think once you're young, you're in high school,
right?
You know,
have questions.
Young relative to a college kid. Remember that to our adult listeners. I think when you're a high school kid, you're kind of just like, oh, my dad says this or my mom says this. I'm okay with that. Republicanism, blah, blah, blah. You get to college, you start actually asking questions.
Right.
And that's when you're open to new ideas. That doesn't necessarily mean your new ideas are going to be a consistent political philosophy. It could just mean you go from a Republican to a Democrat. But I think that once you get older, I think they're set in stone. I think people once you get into your 40s, 50s, people are just
bam. There are some people I can talk to all day and they won't change their mind even if they can't even argue with me. If they know they have no arguments
just,
at all.
At the end, it's just agree to disagree.
Maybe it's just that you're wrong more often.
They say that sometimes too.
Yeah,
let's just agree to disagree.
I've heard from many listeners that they find you mostly wrong.
Me?
Yeah.
Well,
by the way, sup nerds.
Yeah,
I'm back.
Spangle's back.
Nobody's told me I'm wrong, so they want to talk to me.
We told you, there was one episode where we basically just screamed you're wrong at you for the whole time.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And I think only one person commented and said that they see my point of view.
Who? Are you talking about the judicial review thing?
Yeah.
He submitted a link to an article saying that the founders intended judicial review.
That's cool.
That's the exact opposite of what you were arguing.
Spangle's back now.
I apologize. I had duty called here. So
you got the best 15 minutes of this podcast you've ever had.
Excellent.
Yeah. So we did move on to Fast and Furious while you're gone.
Okay.
Do you have any comments about it before we move on?
You know, it was one of those things that was discovered probably about a year ago by the Daily Caller, and I couldn't believe that it never caught on in the mainstream press at all. And, I mean, because it wasn't a conspiracy theory, there was hard documented evidence that there was something taking place, you know, that Holder was involved.
I've sort of giggled a little bit at the Republican outrage over the executive privilege because if my memory serves me correct, they did the exact same thing with Scooter Libby, the Republicans did. So it is basically another sign of, oh, well, we're outraged now, even though we weren't 5 years ago when our side did it.
Yes, and that harkens to a lot of what we talked about at the time you were going.
You know, and so it is – it's an interesting view into national politics. I think that it's disgraceful if it's true, and I it's all alleged at this point. And I think that Eric Holder, if it is not only should he resign, but he should be held accountable if he's committed any crimes.
Don't you think that he'd just get pardoned?
Probably. But you know what the fact is that Americans have selective outrage. They're outraged over Syria, but we look at Mexico and we have 50,000 people dying in the last 5 years in Mexico over drugs. And we've talked about how American policy has contributed to that. But we have a nation to the south of us where people live in absolute fear the closer they are to the American border, that if they open up their door or even if they go to sleep, they may not wake up.
Yeah, and they actually – there's numerous stories where the cops, the Mexican police will come into people's house, kidnap them, and just take them to the drug cartels because they're working for the drug cartels.
The nation directly to our south – it's not even just a policy thing. It's a human thing. It's looking at them and empathizing with their situation where they don't know who to trust. It's similar to in Afghanistan where they don't know who to trust. If I talk to the people that I think have my best interest, which is the American soldier, they may give that information to the Afghani police who I don't know if they have my best interest at heart, who may be working for the Taliban who I know want to kill me if I talk to the Americans. And you don't have a dissimilar situation in Mexico. And I don't know why we're, as Americans, not more involved as a people in having some moral outrage at that. I'm not asking for a government solution. I'm asking for Americans to look at that situation and think about American policy and how that's contributing to that situation. And to have a United States Attorney General and an presidential administration send guns to Mexico to be used in crimes, in murdering Mexican citizens, is so far beyond Scooter Libby and lying about Valerie Plame, which was wrong, don't get me wrong, but she wasn't like a covert secret operations person.
Now, wasn't
she was working in Washington D.C. in the CIA, and they outed him. She was part of the Washington social class. This is the United States government sending weapons to a country where there is a massive civil war, and those guns are used to kill Mexican citizens. It's morally outrageous, and Americans should be outraged, and they should be extremely pissed off.
But do you think they will be? Do you think that Americans will?
Yes.
You do?
I do. Okay. I think if the media can present the story and they present it in a way that can be grasped by most people who don't understand politics, then they will be outraged. Because at the bottom line is that Americans are decent people. They are good people who want people – they want Afghanis and Mexicans and Colombians and Iraqis to wake up every day, to not be afraid, to prosper, and to do good. Now, I'm not saying every American is like that, but the majority of Americans are good people who just want the world to have peace.
Right.
And we have been sold in an Orwellian type of, it's why we have as our cover photo,
War
is Peace, from 1984. We have been sold this bill of goods that doing violence is the right thing to do to bring about peace. And this is another instance of the American government doing violence to try and bring about peace. And no matter what their intentions were, because I think most politicians think that their actions bring about good and, they have good intentions. It's just that they're sadly wrong, profoundly wrong, and violence is never going to truly bring about peace.
Yeah.
Well, like Creighton was talking about while you were gone, it could have been a political move, Just get gun regulations.
Yeah, I've heard this. I don't know 100% the truth of the statement, but I've heard that they've actually discovered emails from people within the Fast and Furious program that one of the intentions they had, hoping that would come out of this, was that gun control legislation would be able to get a bigger popular support.
Yeah.
And
it, as far as I understand it, it was not an intent. It was more of a, well, this will be a good byproduct of
it. That's what I thought.
You know.
And it's just like, I feel like that's probably not, it's there is probably, I don't think that they started it trying to do that. But to assume that there is no political purposes in this, I mean,
yeah.
come on.
And let's wrap up. I'll make the, if you're ready to play the music here.
Sure.
You know, I'll wrap up with the final statement about the basis of libertarianism. We want to tap into that American good. You know, we want to give individuals their own choices so they can make the right choice. We want our government to make the right choices. The right choices are no violence, no force, peace. You know, that is the basis of libertarianism, is the golden rule. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And the other two political parties and movements, the conservatives and the liberals, while they do have certain policies that would bring about more choice and more peace, the majority of the time they are infringing on the golden rule. They are trying to use government force to bring about change. And it will never work, because that is not an American, that is not the human spirit. And libertarianism is perfectly in line with the human spirit, because we all want just to live good lives and make good choices and treat our neighbor right. Do you guys have any final comments?
Nope. Are there any events coming up?
Nada.
No.
Nope.
All right.
So hit that final music. Thank you for joining us this week on We Are Libertarians. As always, we record this once a week. If you have any comments for us, go to wearelibertarians.com. That'll take you to our Facebook page. And you can check out... what is this?
Say what again?
Yes. And we'll go out on our Easter egg with a peaceful movie, Pulp Fiction. You guys have... Galt, by the way, has not seen Pulp Fiction. Didn't even know what it was.
Yeah, he didn't even know it existed until I mentioned it today.
I just want to strangle the little bastard sometimes.
Sorry,
man.
Oh my god, you guys.
Hey, you guys be good this week. I'll take care. We'll see you next week.
Special thing for you next week.
That's what she said.
What does Marcellus Wallace look like?
What?
What country you from?
What?
What ain't no country I ever heard of? They speak English and what?
What?
English, mother! Do you speak it?
Yes.
Then you know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Describe what Marcellus Wallace looks like.
What?
Say what again? Say what again? I dare you. I double dare you, mother! Say what one more goddamn times.
He's black.
Go on.
He's bald.
Does he look like a bitch?
What?
Does he look like a bitch?
No!
Then why you try to him like a bitch, Brett?
Yes, you did.
Brett, you tried to well, Marcellus Wallace don't like to be by anybody except Mrs. Wallace.
This podcast is produced by What is a Hoosier Productions.